We will invite Dr. Camille Hanais King as the first presenter.
Good afternoon. Can you tell I'm nervous?
No.
I am. Okay. My research is titled Binding the South, the Post-Homicide Experience of Black Mothers Following the Deaths of Their Sons by Murder. And this is my dissertation research. I have no relationships to disclose. My interest in this topic was sparked in 2005 following media reports on the significantly high numbers of young black men who were dying through gun violence because of their association with gangs. The Toronto Star newspaper dubbed 2005 the year of the gun and did a compilation of photographs of what appeared to be young black men killed as a result of gun violence. Weeping mothers in their most intimate moments of grief were publicly displayed in the media with the underlying text that the black community was in crisis and the subtext that single mothers were to blame. The community was indicted and challenged to do something about the growing problem. Canada has one of the lowest homicide rates in the world at 0.02%. In fact, there were 610 homicides in all of Canada in 2009. However, the lethality and violence of this crime brings it to the forefront of social discourse and concerns. Within the USA and Canada, 18 to 24-year-olds experience the highest rates of homicide. While homicide is the leading cause of death of African-American males between the ages of 15 and 44, there are no comparable race-based statistics in Canada, since Canada does not disaggregate crime by race. However, what is abstracted from the media reports is a disproportionate percentage of homicides in Ontario involve black men between the ages of 14 and 30. Research tells us that parents whose children die violently experience a complicated and difficult bereavement. Their experience disturbances in affective, behavioral, cognitive, and physiological domains. Homicide grief is characterized by somatic disturbances, depression, helplessness, terror, guilt, and rage. Violent death shatters the assumptive world. Murder reverberates. It has a devastating impact on surviving families and on the mental health of communities. Whether they knew the victim or not, community members may experience feelings of psychological distress and vulnerability after a murder. While African Americans have a high level of homicide loss, their grief experience is absent from the literature. In most of the studies completed thus far, the subjects have not been racially diverse, and the main focus of a large number of studies have been on the presence, predictors, and symptomology of post-traumatic stress disorder. This exploratory qualitative research was undertaken to obtain understanding of the social experiences, unique stressors, and psychological processes black mothers experience following gun violence. The goal was to explore how they process the grief and trauma and to delineate the processes whereby they coped with, adapted to, and made sense of their loss. Constructive grounded theory paradigm was used for data collection and analysis. Grounded theory methodology was chosen as it is beneficial when little is known about the topic. And as I've said, there's been no studies done. The data came from in-depth interviews with 10 black mothers ages 39 to 67 who lost sons to gun violence. While I had an interview guide, the women were given the space to speak freely with minimal interruptions from me. Their sons range in ages from 15 to 26. From the analysis of the interview and through a process of constant comparison, 8 major categories and a core process emerged. The 8 categories were shattering event, live in a nightmare, in the vortex of loss, struggling to cope, unraveled web of relations, webs of constriction, and reappraisal of the self and world, and the core psychosocial process binding the self. The categories are interrelated and illuminate the factors which shape, constrain, and determine how grief is experienced and expressed. Study participants cope with the intersection of 3 injurious phenomena: the sudden violent deaths of their sons, the associated psychosocial correlates, and the construct of race. These 3 intertwining aspects highlight the interactional relationships between individuals and their social-cultural environment. The core category or basic social process that emerged from the analysis was binding the self. Binding the self is a metaphor conceptualized from the mother's narratives of their deeply held belief that there existed a social-cultural imperative that, as Black women, they had to be strong. This culturally embedded self-referent belief shaped the ways in which they coped with loss, interacted with others, embarked on agentic actions, and transformed their grief. Binding the self reflects the overall psychological experience, including their interpretations, reactions, resilience, self-efficacy, and adaptation. Binding the self was an organizing function throughout the course of bereavement. The mothers bind themselves from the moment of notification and as they traverse through the psychosocial process of violent death bereavement. Binding the self is a dynamic interweaving of psychological and sociological factors. The findings from this study also highlight that the mother's bereavement was inextricably linked to their race. By explicating how the context of violent dying coalescing with the construct of race were sources of vulnerability and powerlessness which affected their psychological well-being. Their experience of loss was positioned against a dominant discourse about Black men's predilection to violence and criminality. Thus, their experience of the self, their relationship, and their loss were culturally and linguistically structured. Based on the analysis of the data, a model was developed which situates the post-death experience within a psychosocial framework. The model illustrates that there's a bidirectional relationship between psychological and sociological processes. These 2 distinct but parallel processes are dynamic and intertwining. The shaping and configuration of grief and healing occurs through this dual process interaction. I will now talk about the major categories and illustrate use some of the codes to illustrate how I arrived at the categories. In this shattering event, what I've done is I've used quotes from the media to illustrate how the media is significant to women's bereavement. The shattering event reflects the mother's stories of their notification of their son's death. There were comments like, "He went outside to give his friend a pair of shoes. He went to meet his girlfriend after work. He was in Canada for 4 months and went to have his first experience at a nightclub. He went to church for his friend's funeral. He went to his grandmother's house and was waiting at the bus stop. He went to sort out a misunderstanding. He arrived home and was coming out of his car. He was in a car on the highway when the shots rang out." The texture of the mother's language as they describe the day is acute. In their recollection, there's a defined level of detail which was indicative of the trauma they experienced. Their presence at the crime scene exacerbated the anguish of loss and further complicated their bereavement experience. 4 of the mothers within this study were actually in close vicinity when their sons were shot or were called to the crime scene. I will now read a narrative from one of the mothers who was called to the crime scene when her 17-year-old son was shot. When she arrived, she said, I said to the officer, "Can you tell me who's lying there?" And he said, "No, ma'am, they don't know." I said, "Okay." Then I see another officer and I said, "I just received a call that my son got shot. Can you tell me if it's him?" Nobody tells me anything. I'm walking and pacing, walking and pacing. I got there some minutes to 12 and I said, "Okay." But for some reason, I could not leave. Pacing, pacing, making phone calls, asking everyone, "Have you seen her?" Because I have numbers. The officer had tapes all around. I could get no closer. Walking, walking around the tapes, till I see this thing covered up on the ground. The officer was coming around and I said, "I'm here. I need to know if it was my son. I need to know." I keep repeating, "I need to know if it was my son. Just tell me something." It was like I did not exist. Nobody said anything to me. Nobody was saying anything at all. Okay, I was just standing there waiting. I'm standing there. God, no. Why am I here? What am I waiting here for? And yet, I can't leave. It's like I'm stuck. It's like I'm supposed to be there. 2 o'clock in the morning. And I'm still there. And it's like something came to me. Call his phone. Call again. Because all the time I called it, he did not answer. I moved up closer, trying to get closer and closer. I can't pass the yellow tape. I can't pass the yellow line. But I had to go back. I dialed his number. God help me. I could hear the phone ringing under that yellow blanket. Being confronted with the bodies of their sons was psychologically devastated and overwhelmed the mother's internal resources. Victimization intensified feelings of powerlessness when they were barred from contacts with their sons, either at the crime scene or the hospital. Their experience, whether with the police or media, was structured. Living a nightmare. The day is indelibly engraved, and they can retrieve minute details regardless of the time since the murder. They recall exact moment when they heard the news. 5 minutes? Oh my goodness. And reconstruct the words that were said to them, as well as their own verbal and nonverbal reactions. And I have to skip a whole lot. And it doesn't want to go. No. Use that one? Okay. So within the vortex of loss, the mothers speak about losing a part of themselves. They feel as though they experience a perpetual emptiness that can never be fulfilled. They struggle to cope. Their lives are disrupted. And one of the ways they manage and they attempt to cope is by blocking anguish. Another way that was unique to them was wearing the mask. Wearing the mask is a cognitive process which allowed the mothers to preserve self-coherence and a semblance of normalcy. Don't change. It was a process through which they controlled and curtailed where and how they grieved and in front of whom. Wearing the mask allowed the mothers to control the definition of their identity as a survivor of violent death. I'll just keep skipping. Relationships were changed under the weight of stigma and judgment. So what the mothers found that once the crisis occurred, everyone rushed to them. And as the time passed, they began to feel the stigma of judgment. People avoided speaking about their child, which caused them great pain. In the web of constriction, the mothers began to feel that the world was unsafe because in 9 out of 10 cases, there were no apprehensions. The mothers began to feel that anyone could have pulled the trigger and they could be living amongst the killer. So their world became constricted and constrained. Obscured by blackness, they begin to believe that because of the race of their sons, neither the police nor the media care. So the reason there were no apprehension was because the police...
Wow.
So how do they cope? They reappraise the self and the world. For some moms, there's ongoing distress. They feel that the death is senseless and they can make no sense out of it. Other mothers transform sorrow by finding ways to protect their son's identity. They find ways to create scholarships and vigils. They reconcile the death by saying that it was God's will and they have given the child back to God. They also find growth in it because they find an inner strength. So they say change their perception. So the study finding argues that there's a dynamic intertwining of psychological and sociocultural factors following a violent death which shapes and determines the experience of loss. The study also illustrates the complex and synergistic relationship of violent death, trauma, grief, and race. These interrelated factors create disruptions, fragmentations, and additional layers of difficulties in the bereavement trajectory of black mothers. Thank you.